Okay. Let's finish off what we've started quite a long time ago, that David. Please, everyone should have one of these.
Thank you.
Pass them down. Okay, we have a full shlema for Jenny. She had some work done on her leg. Like I did. Okay. Okay. I'm going to start reading a few psukim.
We were on 7. We were on 7:38. Yeah.
Shmuel Bet Perek Zion, yes. But first I want to read to you a few psukim in Sefer Bereishis.
Hereth which?
I'm going to read some psukim. You don't have to turn.
Okay.
I'm going to read some psukim in Sefer Bereishis, and we're going to have an attempt to figure out why I'm quoting these psukim in Bereishis. Okay. Remember where we left off last time, that David was dancing profusely before the Aron? Mm-hmm. Right? Remember the word that Tanakh used? Mecharker. But when she saw him, the text uses the word mechazez u'mecharker. Now, that's where we left off last time. It seems that it could be that David started off mecharkering, right? He started off dancing, but then with the frenzy of it all, you have a daven, a chassidish, a dance, and after 15 minutes, 20 minutes, the same, you start to get a little, the words themselves, the dance itself, seems to rub off on everyone and they get more and more excited. Or it could be that the Tanakh is showing what Michal, how she would interpret Mecharker. Mm-hmm. Right? She would interpret Mecharker as Mefazez and Mecharker, which is far more emphatic.
Frivolous.
Okay, and frivolous would be a good word. So here is the example I'm giving. The brothers of Yosef saw him approaching. Right, and they had some mischievous intentions for him. Here comes that dreamer of dreams. At first, they just thought we have to teach him a lesson. Then it became very violent. They wanted to kill him. They wanted to put him in a pit. Okay. Now, at some point, when they're probably still wondering what to do with him, so Yehuda offers some personal gain.
Yes.
Why should we just kill him? Let's get something for him, right? So whether Yehuda had intention to actually save his life, right? Because everyone else had murder in their eyes. They wanted to kill him, right? So Yehuda is very smart. He's like Dale Carnegie. He wants to save Yosef's life, but he knows, like Reuven probably, that just saying, we're not going to kill him, wouldn't work. He has to say something that will save Yosef's life that will work. Mm-hmm. Right? Which is, let's sell him. Let's get something for him. Mabetza. Right? I would suggest, this is way off our base, but I would suggest good intentions on the part of Yehuda, simply because the text has him using the word ochinu twice. Mm-hmm. Right? No one uses the word ochinu. Right? No one says, Reuven just says, Reuven wants to save him because of their father.
Yeah.
But he says, what good is there to shed the blood of our brother? After all, he's our brother. Right? Right? And the next story he tells one of his sons, marry the wife of your brother.
Yes.
Maintain the light. So Yehuda is finally, after all these generations in Bereishis, trying to finally, he's one person making an attempt to get brothers together, and he does so more and more later on in the story. He stands up for Binyamin, he's there, okay, fine. All right, but that's all this is sidetracking. What happens is that when they're he says they're thinking of what to do with him. They haven't seen an idea of how to sell him yet, and they put him in a pit.
Yes.
Right, Reuven's plan was to go back later and to pick him up. Right, So while he's sitting in the pit, the brothers sit down to eat food, mm-hmm. right? And they lift up their eyes, and what do they see? Caravan of
Ishmaelim.
Indeed. It says, V'hinei orchat Yishmaelim ba'am migilad, ugmalehem no si'im nocho'ot utzliv alot hulchim lahorid mitzrayma. The Ishmaelim were on their way to Egypt, to this where the brothers are, is between them and Ishmaelim. And they decide, wait a second, we can turn some profit here. Right? So that's where Yehuda steps up. So he says, Ma betza kin harogis achinu v'chisinu estomo, l'chuvenim karenu li'ishmaelim, v'yodeinu al tihibo, ki achinu v'sarenu hu v'ishmuechav. They may, who knows, if we sell him, they're not going to kill him. You don't buy someone to kill him, right? At least, well, he'll get sold a few times, sold from this people to that people, people will, the middleman, and they'll make money, we'll make money, and all will be the same, right? Who knows, maybe he'll show up later. But here he is, and they say, let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. But that's not what happened. Vayavru anoshim midyonim socharim vayimshechu vayalu et Yosef min habor. Midyonim came down and took him out of the pit. The brothers actually never seemed to sell him. Later on, when he said, don't be upset that you sold me, you were responsible for selling me. Maybe the 10 Harugi Malchus should have told this to Hadrian when he wanted, in the story we read on Yom Kippur. Yeah. Right? But Rashbam says that the brothers never really sold him. They were responsible for selling him, no doubt. But it was the... So what's this Midyonim? All right, I'll admit, Ibn Ezra has such a simple answer. Everybody kvetches out. Ibn Ezra says, Yishmaelim are Midyonim.
Yishmaelim what?
Are Midyonim. They're the same.
Yishmaelim is a more general term, and they're specifically Midyonim.
Abraham had a son named Yishmael. That was his oldest son. Then he had a son named Yitzchak. You know what his third son's name was? Midyon. Right? By the way, with Keturah, there was another son Avram had named Midon. Midon, because that name shows up here too.
Yes.
It says, V'hamidonim machru al
Tohu. So who says that, Rashbam?
Ibn Ezra says that Yishmaelim and Midyonim are interchangeable. Now, that's a fancy thing to say without a proof.
Yeah.
He has a very good proof. He has a really good proof. In Sefer Shoftim, in Perek Vav, there is a battle between Gidon and the Midyonim. Mm-hmm. All you see is Midyonim. The whole story is Midyon. Remember they salted the earth, and yes. He had to hide away, and he had to thresh grain in a wine press everything. Because it was illegal for Jews to thresh grain, and it was a bad situation. The whole story is only Midyan, and then when they're fighting, all of a sudden it's Yishmael out of nowhere. Says Yishmael.
Maybe you took him as a mercenary.
Okay,
I understand.
I understand. Yishmael and Midyanim are going to fight together, no doubt. But that's Ibn Ezra's proof. Okay. Right. All right. So here's what Rashbam says. Rashbam says, who said that they were Yishmaelim? The pasuk, no?
Yeah.
Right. He said they lift up their eyes.
Yes.
And they saw Yishmaelim. The Bible doesn't always tell you what happened. Sometimes the Bible tells you what the people in the story think is happening, even though that's not what happened. These were not, the Ishmaelim weren't there. It was Midyanim that they saw from far. Okay, so...
Why does it matter who they were?
No, this story doesn't really matter too much at all. Our story, I just want to know, was David Mecharker or was he Mefazes? Right? So the answer is he was Mecharker. But when you are, you see, if Princess Diana waves like this, right? So you know, to the Queen, she's like doing this, right? Because you're supposed to do this. Right? Anything more than this. Is, jumping jacks, you know, right? So, to Michal, even dancing a little jig to her is unkingly. The king doesn't do that, right? Okay, that's all he had to say about that. All right, so let's get back to the way he responds to her.
Yes.
All right. So Michal, Perek Vav, Pasuk Ted Zayin. 6:16. Mm-hmm. Everyone have it? Shmuel Bet 6:16.
7:38.
Top of the page. 7:38, top of the page.
Right, the Haya Aron Hashem Ba'ir David, and the Aron came to the city of David. Remember, Jerusalem has just been conquered.
Yes.
Right? So the little Dvar Torah for Yom Yerushalayim coming up in a few days is that Jerusalem, when we first came to Israel, wasn't in our hands for our first 500 years there. Mm-hmm. When we came to Israel the second time, Yerushalayim was first inhabited, and then the rest of Israel built out of Yerushalayim. Right? This is how Rav Soloveitchik explains an interesting opinion in the Rambam. The Rambam holds that Israel was imbued with sanctity twice. Right? Once when we entered the land in the time of Yeshua, and once when we returned to the land in the time of Ezra. You followed?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Rambam sides with the opinion, you may recognize it from the Talmud, maybe not. It says, Kidsha l'shaita, Velo kidsha l'asid lavo, which means Yahushua sanctified the land, but not in perpetuity. The land is only sanctified if we're living there. When the Babylonians exiled us, Israel was like any other country in the world, like it was before we entered in the time of Yahushua. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of its extra sanctity. Okay, I must tell you, there's another opinion in the Talmud that says, no, once we entered the land of Israel in the days of Joshua, the land was forever made holy. Okay, but the Rambam paskins kitcha l'shaita kitcha l'osid lavo. I understand the strategy what he's getting at, because he wants to hold that Ezra needed to sanctify it again, to the point that whatever Ezra sanctified was considered part of the Holy Land. But if Ezra didn't sanctify it, even if Yehoshua did, I hope you hear that reason. Right? You hear that difference? Mm-hmm. Even if Yehoshua did, even if Jews did live in this place, if Ezra did not sanctify the land, it remained unholy. Which is why there is an opinion, for those who are following in the next year after this, Masechah Shviyas, although we didn't do it, it was about 4 months ago that we did this.
No.
There's a map of Israel, not of today's Israel.
According to Ezra.
Ezra's map of Israel, which does not include some, doesn't include Akko, doesn't include some cities north, to the northwest, doesn't include some of Ashkelon even. So some of these places are not Shemitah worthy. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that, so we give Shemitah in these places midrabanan, but Shemitah all over Israel is rabbinic today anyway. But besides that, I want to get this back here for our purposes. Is that the second time we came back to Israel, right? When Ezra sanctified the land of Israel, the Rambam says it was sanctified forever. So the question is obvious on the Rambam.
How can do this?
If someone holds that when Yehoshua sanctified the land, it was forever holy, okay. It's holy after the Babylonians exile us, and it's holy after the Romans exile us, and that's it. Right? But the Rambam seems to have it two ways. The Rambam says that when Yehoshua sanctified the land, it was not in perpetuity. But when Ezra sanctified the land, it was. Explain.
Good.
What's the difference? So I just told you the difference. Yes. What? Because the first time we didn't sanctify Yerushalayim. The sanctity of Yerushalayim had nothing to do with the sanctity of Israel. Joshua did not conquer Jerusalem. It wasn't in our hands till David did 500 years later. It says in Yehoshua, they could not conquer Jerusalem from the Yebusi.
Yeah.
So if Jerusalem was not part of our holy country at the time it became sanctified, it didn't imbue it with eternal sanctity. Now, Jerusalem is imbued with eternal sanctity. When the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem, the city remained holy, but not the country. What that means actually halachically and the practical sense is a little complicated for us now. So to the point that the place where the temple stood is still considered holy by us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We should
Isn't
not work.
Isn't that the mount where Abraham Shechem...
Okay, fine. It's a holy place. In fact, the Rambam is going to discuss
that
here.
Doesn't that become the center of the earth?
Okay, okay, well, this is fine. It means, but it's...
Okay,
that is... So Jerusalem did not lose its sanctity in those 70 years, and it didn't lose its sanctity after the Roman conquest. Here's the difference. Israel lost its sanctity during those 70 years, but Israel maintained its sanctity from Ezra to today. Why? Why did it lose its sanctity after Yahushua's conquest, but not after Ezra's conquest? The answer is because the sanctity imbued upon Israel by Ezra was done through Jerusalem. Jerusalem was where they returned to, and then they built up, the place was called Judah for that reason. But when we came to Israel in the time of Yahushua, Jerusalem was not part of the equation. Right?
And also it takes some years to conquer the land, so it doesn't get immunity immediately for the sanctity because until
So Jerusalem's special status is in terms of its the holiness of the Rabbis, which is why even though we have Jerusalem today, we're still going to mourn for it on Tisha B'Av and say certain prayers for it on Tisha B'Av, right? Yes.
The Tehillim goes against this because Eich Nashir et Shir Adonai Badmat Nechar.
Right.
So if the implication of Eich Nashir et Shir Adonai is that Yerushalayim is Kodesh. Next line is Yimishkachech Yerushalayim.
Okay. Oh, they never stopped hoping to return to it. But no, where does it say in that song? Okay, so I understand. I can only sing the Shir of God in Jerusalem. I can say that, but that's precisely the point. Jerusalem maintained its sanctity. It's just we weren't allowed to be there to do anything about it. So
it retains its sanctity and it doesn't get it till Ezra. This is before Ezra.
Well, Jerusalem did not lose its sanctity. I'm just trying to explain the Rambam.
Okay.
He says Israel lost its sanctity the first time, but not the second time. When the Babylonians conquered Israel, the country lost its sanctity. When the Romans conquered Israel, Israel remained sanctified. Here's the difference. We keep Shemitah today, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the 70 years between the in the exile, if Jews remained in Israel, there was no Shemitah. There were no tithes. There was no. It was Argentina. Following? 70 years in between the exile, when the Babylonians exiled us to the time we returned, there was no sanctity of the land. Now I can take your question.
Physically, Jerusalem was never in any of the Shvatim. It was a neutral place.
Correct.
So maybe there has something to do with all these
That's an interesting thing. Physically on the map, it straddles between Yehuda and Binyamin, but the Gemara says it belongs to all the tribes,
right.
Like the UN belongs to all the nations of the world, even though it's physically in New York. So this is perhaps manifest by the fact that in Shmuel Bet, when David purchases the mountain, it says he paid 50 shekels for it, and in Divrei Yamim it says he paid 600 shekels for it. The difference being that in Divrei Yamim he took 50 from the other 11 tribes so that everyone would feel they have a share in it, right? Be that as it may, it could be that element of, and there's no other place like that in all of Israel, any city is so how could a city like that would never lose its sanctity? Okay, could be. Yeah. All right, I'm just saying that so here's the point I'm trying to make, is that in all these years, the Aron of God, the Mishkan, never stood in Jerusalem. It was in four other places. First it started in Gilgal, mm-hmm. then Shiloh for the most time, then Nov, and then Givon. Right, in those four places. So right now it's going to Jerusalem. Now when I said it's in Givon, this is a real chiddush.
Mm-hmm.
David just took the Aron to Jerusalem, but the Mishkan,
yes.
The menorah, the Shulchan, so this is what makes the Yerushalmi say there are two Arons. The Mishkan was not staying in Jerusalem, that was in Givon. It says Shlomo worshipped in Givon at the Bama HaGedola. Right, that's what God appeared to him. And
they grew up the Aron by itself?
Just the Aron, apparently.
How come they didn't try to recreate the Mishkan right away?
David certainly would have, if in the very next story, which is five psukim from now, God had given him. But obviously that's he brought the Aron to Jerusalem to build a temple around it, and he was rebuffed.
Didn't we also carry some Aron during the war time of the war? Since then we're still fighting the wars around, so we use Aron with them as usually, because Aron was also obviously in front of the army because Shem is in this one.
That's what the Yerushalmi says. There were two Arons, one that they took to battle with them. The problem of Bnei Eli is that they took the one that used to stay behind in the sanctuary, and that one they took with them. So, okay.
That was, and by the way, Trump was there.
If you look carefully in the Eli. It's interesting because half the time there's something called Aron Elokim, and look, and the half the time it says Aron, and it uses Yud Kei Vav Kei. I won't get into all of the the biblical scholarship on this, but that's part of what the Yerushalmi used to indicate that they were two Arons.
Yes, for the military. All right.
Okay, now so David is taking the Aron to Jerusalem in the hopes very soon of building a temple around it.
Yes.
All right. Vayatzigu osobim komo. Right? She makes a bizayon of him. Remember, mefazez, bez, vativez. It's interesting onomatopoetica going on there. They brought it and they put it in its place. Besocha ohel, in a tent. That Asher Natalo David, Vayal David Olot Lifnei Hashem Ushlamim. David brought up sacrifice. Wait a second, David's not a Kohen. And where is this? This is just any. Okay, this is known. This is a short time in Jewish history known as Heter Bamot, where you could bring sacrifices anywhere,
like Shmuel,
by anyone. Shmuel does it all over the place.
Yeah.
Okay, this kind of behavior in other books of Tanakh, especially Yehoshua, is the stuff that Jews are going to go to war over. You know what I'm talking about, right? At the end of Sefer Yehoshua. All right? And they're doing it all over the place. Things are good. David is in a good mood, right? There are a lot of different opinions what these things are. Some say it's a piece of beef, some a pack of raisins.
Shrine.
He gives a shrine from the king. Beautiful. So maybe a dollar bill also he was giving them. Who knows? Vayoshev David levarech et beito. And David came back in order to bless his household. By this time, his household is quite large, right? As we already know from Perek Gimel. So vateitzei Michal bas Shaul likras David. So Michal, the daughter of Shaul, has to tell it Michal bas Shaul, right? His first wife. He's got plenty of others by now. Vatomer manichbad hayom melech Yisrael. Notice it says likrat. It doesn't say likrat hamelech. It says likrat David, because she's about to confront.
She's
Michal bat Shaul. She's the princess to come to this.
And he's just David.
Right. And he's. Do you remember? Remember we did this when we learned Megillat Esther.
That
she said lahavi es. Vashti Hamalka,
right.
Malchus. And what does the next pasuk say? Vatimain, Hamalka Vashti. Don't tell me I'm Vashti Hamalka. I'm Hamalka Vashti, buddy. Right? You're Melech because you usurped something. King, right? The kingship is in my veins. It's not in yours. Right? Okay. All right. So that's the text is giving us a hint at what's coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful the way it does that. But Tomer, and this is her statement here. Ma nichbad hayom melech Yisrael asher niglo hayom le'inei amhos avadov ki galos niglos achal areikim. What a glorious day this is for Israel. Right? Now she says that you revealed yourself to the hand. Look, it says he was dancing with an ephod bad. What can I say? I don't know.
Did you have underwear on those days?
Loincloths.
Okay.
Yes.
No, it's. I don't, what can I say? It was. What she think is revealing? If you wear a short sleeved shirt or something, it's like, you know.
Your knees. Right, not sneeze.
Maybe he wasn't wearing a tie. He took off his necktie. All right, he took off his hat. All right, so. Like then you appear like one of the empty headed ones. Vayomer David El Michal. So. What's in it for her? What is she getting out of this?
Because she feels disgraced.
Dance with other women. She's jealous.
Yeah. Wow. It's okay. Such a special day. This is how she greets him.
No, because
she's jealous for what?
She feels disgraced that
she's royalty.
You know, she's a daughter of a king, and this is the one that she's married to. He's such a fool. I mean, he's such a.
I think she can't help herself. But try, let's go back to the history.
She has many wives.
She's the only woman in the Tanakh of whom it says she loved a man, and this is the man. She loves David. She remembers loving David. Right?
She was separated from him.
But you know, love has a nasty habit of disappearing overnight, as you know, but certainly over time. And. You know, I mean, she didn't take the high road when defending David to her father, remember? He said he'd kill me, what can I do? I don't know what to do. Right? So, and then she was taken from David and given to another man. What was that? I don't know, I have to start asking people. I mean, isn't there something called like Yehoreg Val Yavor, you know?
Yes,
it's supposed to die rather than do that. Isn't it so? Unless, as the rabbis say, yeah.
They divorced.
He didn't touch her.
Never
touched her.
Maybe she grew to love him.
Palti ban laish. The rabbis love him. The rabbis treat him very well in rabbinic literature. I'm not so inclined. I'm not going to disagree with the midrashim on this, but I would prefer to say that Palti ban laish should have looked Shaul in the face and say, Shaul, you're going to have to kill me. You know your daughter's a married woman. I'm not going to do this. Shaul probably would have killed him.
That's right.
She's married to a man who is treasonous. I got a heter from Beis Din to dissolve the marriage. Get out of here. You don't want to marry her, I'll get someone else.
Right.
Chances are, she's a princess, and it's probably a little... It's a feather in his cap, and it's a plum position. You get to live in the palace, and you get to be married to the king's daughter. How's that? What can I say? But the rabbis insist that Palti ben Laish didn't go near her. Right? He is crying when David, you know, but Michal is already back with David, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think
what's the time frame? How long were they apart?
That depends. It depends on how long you think Shaul was king. I think she was separated from him for years, 10, 12 years. But if Shaul was only king for 2 years altogether, which is what the Seder Olam suggests, and I told you the different opinions about that, you know, with what that means, Shaul, according to that, would be a good 20 to 25 years older than Shmuel, which doesn't fit the storyline, right? Shaul is Bachur Vatov, he's Meshichmo V'mal, he's so tall and handsome, and the girls love talking to him. And Shmuel is this old fuddy-duddy whose kids are going bad. And we'd ask you, but you're too old. Yeah.
You'll get some of them. Right?
And Shaul is 25, 30 years older than Shmuel? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Shaul was a king longer, then things might be looking differently. But I go with that, somewhere in the middle. Michal was apart from David for years. But let's try to imagine, what do you think the reunion was like? Right? When Michal married David, David had just killed Goliath, he's definitely a star. Do you think he ever told her in their most intimate moments that, you know, Michal, let me tell you a secret? What secret would that be?
I'm going to be king.
Samuel has picked me.
No. Shmuel picked me to be king. What do you think?
He didn't tell her.
He's afraid that she's going to tell it to her father?
Right.
Because he doesn't let on to anybody else. But I'm told by a defector from North Korea that even in the most intimate moments, couples will not tell each other,
no.
Do you think that, are we getting enough food from the dear leader?
Right.
Because the next morning they're going to be killed.
Never tries.
Maybe our cousin who was just taken away to one of those learning camps, re-education camps. Maybe he didn't deserve... Oh, that's it, you're dead in the morning. I mean, it's really an awful situation, isn't it? David can't trust Michal, you think, here? Who I don't know.
Well, they never have children, so you might as well say, since that didn't lead to anything, why should have...
I'm sure there was an amorous situation between the two of them. When he married her, it was, you know...
But he had other wives also.
Not at the time he married Michal, you know, that's a plum position,
maybe,
right?
Maybe he suspected to marry the first daughter, like Kashul promised him the first daughter.
Okay, all right, we agree here that he didn't tell her? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
So, it's true. As soon as David takes those two other wives, Abigail and Achinoam, it's the next pasuk that says, and Shaul took Michal and gave her to Palti ben Laish. Right? Does the king have the right to dissolve marriages? Halachically, no, that doesn't work that way. Halachically, by the way, some betidim here in America and in Israel do this. I mean, justifiably. I'm not just talking about, okay, your husband's not giving you a get, okay, you can get remarried. No, if they show that at the time of the marriage there was a mistaken impression that was lent, then they'll dissolve the wedding. So this marriage was never... And if it was, so if they're children, so what? There's no such thing as out-of-wedlock children, right? So they just say that... So Shaul said, poof, you're not married, right? So, you know, that's probably how Chazal can deal with the fact that David takes her back. Because there's a very, very clear law in the Torah, talk to me, yeah? That says...
He can't take a wife back then. But only if it's not a Sefer Kritut. But if David never gave a Sefer Kritut, then that's my issue.
Good, there you
so
go.
So there's no problem with issue.
There you go, because he was never really married to her.
Yeah.
Well, if he didn't give her a Sefer Kritut that she's an adulteress, then he certainly can't take her back.
But if he's adulterous by the Anusim.
No, that's what they're saying. So if the king says you have to live with my daughter, I bet they're going to live with her. He's going to have to make it look like he's living with her. All right, so the rabbis had different creative ways of how, you know, how they could work this through while maintaining everybody's good reputation. But what was the reunion like? Remember how she came back to him? I did that last time. As a condition...
She hid them.
As a condition of Avner's... turn to David's side, remember?
Yes.
Avner was accused by Ishbosheth, remember? And he
right.
said,
oh, yeah.
I'm going to bring the kingdom over to David's side. So he goes to David. This is bad news for Yoav. We did that last week, remember? Mm-hmm. So Avner comes over to David's side, and David is very, very clever. I get two things out of this. You know what, Avner? This is a test of a few things. One, do you really mean to bring the kingdom from Ishbosheth to me? And two, do you have the wherewithal to do it? Surely Ishbosheth does not want his sister, Michal, to go back to David. That would... He's dead shortly after that, for sure. And he is. He's assassinated right after that. Right? If David takes Michal, then forget it. That's right? The Malbim says that's why David planted his kingdom in Jerusalem to begin with. He was in Hebron first for 7 years. Hebron is the natural place. It's in the middle of Yehuda. What's he going up to the north of Yehuda? Because he wanted to come up to Binyamin. Binyamin is the seat of the first kingdom. It's an Ir Shechubrala, a city that will unite the old kingdom, which is to the north, with the Yehuda kingdom. All right, so I think the reunion was... David must have just made the point to her, listen, when I married you, you were everything, and I was just, you know, rags to riches, right? And I appreciated that. And I know you're coming back to me now. The last time I saw you was when you let me out the window, right?
Yeah. Saved my life also.
Right, he doesn't know that she said he threatened me. I don't know if David never had a small bet in front of him.
No.
But so now David has, like Mara says, 18 wives, right, and lots of children, and here comes back the princess, right? So she probably, you know, I don't think she has nothing to lose.
You think she was bitter?
Yeah, she's very bitter for sure, and she's probably by now. Especially in the Cheshbon I just made, a lot older than
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, and she has no children, so it's yeah. There's a movie called David and Bathsheba with Gregory Peck. The movie is not worth a dime, I think. But there's the scene where she sees him dancing and she talks to him about it and the conversation. It's a good long scene, about 10 minutes. It's worth it just for that one. Where he says, you know, she asks him, "Why did you call for me? Why did you insist that I come back from my brother?" Right. So he says, "Well, if you must know, it was so that I could unify the kingdom." And then she starts crying. Right? But she's you know, she's saying how much better my father was than you are. And you're nothing of a king. My father was... And in the scene, David played... It's so beautifully played. He says just what I would expect of it to say. You know what? You're right. Your father was a better king than I am. He was a better person than I am. David admits to it all in that scene. Because that's the picture Chazal created of David. Right? It's a Gemara Neum in the beginning of the second parak. Let's finish up here. And he says, V'yama David al Michal, Lifnei Hashem asher b'char b'me avich. Umikol beiso letzavoso si nogid alam Hashem al Yisrael. V'sichakti lifnei Hashem. You see, this is not the way couples should argue. A therapist can tell you the way a couple argues what kind of marriage this is, more than the way they talk in a friendly manner. And you can really see how a couple argues, then you can see what's going on here. All right? Because the argument is this the proper behavior for a king? Who said anything about Shaul and what's... Why is David bringing in other things? Just say what the Rambam says here, which is what we're going to have to start next week. I always have to leave you wanting more. But
next week, yeah.
Next week is...
It's a Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, it's Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. Stam will be here.
But we could come.
Yeah.
We could come.
What do you think?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'll be here, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's the end of the weekend. It's right before Shavuos. We have some learning to do. The Monday after that, I'll be in Israel. So we'll have class. I'll have class next week. Yeah, just I'm back for 1 week. All right. So. So we'll have class next week. Oh no! Forgive me. No, I can't. We have a wedding next week. Is Bracha Goldress's wedding? I'm sorry.
So yes. 2 Mondays now we don't have.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
But we have classes Wednesday morning.
Yes. There is a Wednesday.
Wednesday overnight. Yeah.
Wednesday Ten Commandments class. So let me just get what's going on here. David is actually arguing well. When I say a bad argument is where, let's say, one spouse says, you know, you keep coming late. Why do I always have to wait for you? Mm-hmm. Right? Every single time we make up for a meeting and I called you, I told you I need to be on time because I have something after, and now I'm going to make some other people late. Right? Okay. So what does he say? Oh, yeah? Well, what about that time? And he's not only bringing up something where, if it's bad enough if he brings up where she was once late, because that's not the issue here, is what we're talking about. You're always late, right? He brings up something totally unrelated to this. Yep. Right? What about that time where, that's not the way to argue. Stick right with the issue. Right. Are you late? Should you be late? Should you not be late? And answer that. Don't bring in other things, because then she's going to have to bring in something else. And then before you know it, you don't even remember what you came here to argue about. Right? Because everything is just... It's like Eov's friends who are, you know, bringing every time they talk about suffering, it gets to a higher level of incapacitating terror. Okay. All right. So why does he bring in Shaul? The narrator brought in Shaul, Michal Bas Shaul, but she didn't mention Shaul.
No.
Okay, so the narrator told you that she is behaving
because
she's Bas Shaul, and David recognizes it. And he says, so tell me, my dear wife, how is a king supposed to dance in front of the Aron? Right? She's going to say, well, this is how my father would dance. Mm-hmm. He says, well, you know what? Your father isn't king, and let me tell you why not. Because your father, every time he did something, whether it was listening to God, and there were little things. David's sins are much more egregious than Shaul's, right? But he thought himself so perfect that he couldn't see anything wrong with what he's doing. So he said that everything your father did, he put his finger to the wind. What are they going to say about this? And he keeps blaming it on the people. Every time he does, he doesn't listen. It's the people wanting to do this. The people wanting to do that. Right? So David says, you know what? Leadership is taking a stand even when it's not popular. You think it was popular when David insisted that, remember when their families were taken captive by the Amalekim at the end of Shmuel Aleph? Yeah. And 200 men remained behind to watch their stuff and to be guards and to, right? Mm-hmm. And when the 400 who went to fight returned with all the spoils, they said, no, you 200 don't get any of this. You didn't come to fight. And David said, yes, but they were still serving a purpose. Everybody shares. Right? So David took a stand. And the people said, okay, I may not agree with it, but he's taking a stand. Right? So David is telling his wife, you know, the reason why your father isn't king anymore is because he wouldn't have danced the way I'm dancing now. Mm-hmm. He would have felt it's too, it's posnished. So we do have enough time to read this Rambam. Let's read. The Rambam at the end, just look at the page, and it's the only page there's writing on it.
Yes.
Look at Halacha Yudal. It says, Mitzvah harbos besimcha zo. He's talking about the Simchas Beis HaShoeva on Sukkos. Says it's a big mitzvah to be marbe in the simcha. Not only just amaratzim. They were the ones dancing and making merry and putting on costumes and things. Everyone else just came to see that spectacle. Hasimcha sheyismach adam ba'asiyas hamitzvah ba'avas hakel shetzivo bahen avodah gedolah hi. The joy that we're supposed to have when serving God is a great type of service. V'chol hamoneya atzmo misimcha zo ra'ui li'yipara mimenu. And if you refrain from such a simcha, it could be something to pay for that. Shneimar tachas hashelo avadato as Hashem elokecha besimcha uvetuv levav. Because you did not serve God in simcha. Yivdu as Hashem besimcha. I mean, look, if the president called you, he saw a message from the president, right? And he said, I need this favor from you. I need this mission for you. Put this together. And he said, I'll pay you handsomely. Say, oh, I can do this, right? So here he is. It's God telling you. So it says, V'chol ha-megas da'ato v'cholei kavod la'atzmo miskabed be'inav b'mekomos elu chote v'shote. And if you see, if you're on your high horse and you say, no, I don't. It's not posnished for me to dance like this or to get besimcha like this. That's a fool and a sinner. Don't make yourself such a hider before the king. He's talking about the king, meaning God. Right? And the more you make yourself mekel gufo, is make yourself lower and lower in these such cases, right? That's the person who rises higher and higher. V'chein David Melech Yisrael Omar. And this is what David told his wife. Unekalosi od mizos v'hizhi shofol be'enai. V'ein ha'gedul v'akavod elo lismoch lifnei Hashem. Shneimar v'hamelech David mefazeiz u'mecharker lifnei Hashem. This is the very end of the halachos of the Rambam of Hilchos Sukkos and Chuluv and Esrog. Because Sukkos is the Chag Simchas Mansim Chaseinim. So at the end of Hilchos Sukkos, the Rambam talks about this grand idea, and he says, and what's the proof? The Hamelech David Mefazeiz Umecharker Lifnei Hashem. Beautiful. Okay, so that's our perek, right? Okay, and then and then it says afterwards that Ulamichal bas Shaul lohaya lo yeled ad yom mosa. Rabbis say she died in childbirth. She did have a baby the day she died.
Ad yom mosa, that's what I say.
Yeah. We did that. Remember the Mishnah. Yeah.
Rabbi wasn't with Bishop to prove.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Michal, that's what it says. At this time, she's probably no youngster, but I think the Parshat Pshat means that you didn't have children.
Just the information?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have to still be together, because he cannot do the say no to her, because, you know.
Okay.
On the time, like go out.
Okay, so we will continue in Mirat Hashem 2 weeks from tonight.
3 weeks.
3 weeks. A week from tonight. So I have a wedding. 2 weeks from tonight, I'm going to be in Israel. And 3 weeks from tonight.
So there's more class 3 weeks.
For the next 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Right.
And then
Zorri,
we're
going to
have.
Third week.
Okay. People,
Mariv
next door.
Okay, you're talking about the.